From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Terry Gross with Fresh Air. It's Blues Week on Fresh Air. Today, a young blues musician who's reviving early blues and adding contemporary sounds. We feature an interview with and performance by Corey Harris. We're listening to music from his latest CD. Also, rock historian Ed Ward profiles the man who walked the dog before the Stones and also did the funky chicken, Rufus Thomas. That's all coming up on Fresh Air. She said, if you ain't no honey dripper, brother, don't mean a doggone thing. First, the news.
From National Public Radio News in Washington, I'm Corey Flintoff. The son of a powerful member of the International Olympic Committee has been indicted in connection with the Salt Lake City Olympic bribery scandal. The Justice Department announced the indictment of John Kim, a South Korean businessman, on charges that he entered the country on a fraudulently obtained green card and lied about it to the FBI. It's the second criminal case stemming from allegations that the Salt Lake City Organizing Committee gave gifts and services to IOC members and their families in exchange for support of the city's bid to hold the 2002 Winter Games. Earlier, a Utah businessman admitted that he helped create a fake job for John Kim with the understanding that the bid committee would pay Kim's salary. Wildfires are burning across the West, the worst right now in California. In the San Bernardino Forest outside of Los Angeles, firefighters are trying to keep the nation's largest wildfire away from resort communities. NPR's Robert Smith reports.
The San Bernardino fire is in its fourth day, and it's consumed 53,000 acres of forest and brush. Firefighters say the blaze is 25% contained, and today they're burning small areas ahead of the main fire in an attempt to stop its progress. The fire is spreading toward the mountain resort communities of Big Bear Lake and Lucerne Valley. Closer to Los Angeles, in the Angeles National Forest, 800 firefighters are battling a 7,000-acre wildfire in steep terrain. Another fire in Riverside County is expected to be out by tonight. In Northern California, firefighters are still chasing clusters of small, uncontained fires in the Shasta Trinity area, but a 34,000-acre blaze in the Modoc National Forest was contained yesterday. Robert Smith, NPR News, Los Angeles.
Anti-independence militias went on a rampage in East Timor today, attacking and beating supporters of independence for the region. NPR's Eric Weiner was in the capital, Dili, during the attacks.
Beginning early this morning, in fact, these pro-Indonesian militia began taking up positions throughout Dili, the capital of East Timor. They set up roadblocks in certain areas, and in front of the UN compound, pretty much in the center of the city, they began attacking pro-independence supporters. They used guns, sometimes automatic weapons, sometimes actually homemade guns, and machetes to attack these people. And it was really the most brazen attack to date because it took place only a few yards from the entrance to the UN compound. Finally, about an hour later, Indonesian riot police arrived on the scene and restored some sort of order. No UN workers were injured.
NPR's Eric Weiner in Dili, East Timor. The Dow Industrials gained 108 points today to close at 10,937. This is NPR. Tropical storm Dennis is weakening off the mid-Atlantic coast today, but the forecasters warn that it could return to do more damage to North Carolina. Dennis has been downgraded from a hurricane to a tropical storm as its winds have fallen to around 60 miles per hour. The storm was on its way back toward land when it stalled over the ocean this morning, but forecasters predicted it will start moving again later in the day. Dennis is still kicking up rough surf, and swimming's been forbidden on beaches as far north as New York's Long Island. The White House says it would welcome an independent investigation into the FBI's use of inflammable tear gas canisters during the 1993 assault at the Branch Davidian compound near Waco, Texas. NPR's Brian Naylor reports.
An unidentified White House official said the Clinton administration would support a thorough and independent look at why the FBI admitted it used the incendiary tear gas canisters. The admission comes after 6 years of denials that any inflammable devices were used in the assault against the Branch Davidians. Meanwhile, House Government Reform Committee Chairman Dan Burton has signed off on additional subpoenas, including one requesting the White House turn over any records of communications it has between a command post set up there and government agents at the scene 6 years ago. Aides say Burton's panel is likely to begin its hearings next month. The House Judiciary Committee is also moving forward with a proposal for a bipartisan commission to investigate the latest Waco revelations. Brian Naylor, NPR News, the Capitol.
In stocks today, the NASDAQ Composite Index gained 11 points to close at 2,751. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Archer Daniels Midland Company, bringing Novasoy brand isoflavones to consumers throughout the United States, on the web at admworld.com.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This is Blues Week on Fresh Air. Today we hear from a young blues musician, Corey Harris, who was described in Blues Review as a throwback to a lost era and an innovator as well. The New York Times described Harris as a newcomer who plays the blues as though he's been living in the Delta since the turn of the century. But Corey Harris is only 30, and he grew up in Denver. He later attended Bates College in Maine, taught and studied briefly in Cameroon, and taught French in a middle school in a small Louisiana town. He started his career as a street musician. Now he plays clubs and blues festivals. In fact, this month he'll be playing in New York, California, Virginia, and Kentucky. His third album, Greens from the Garden, was released in the spring on the Chicago-based blues label Alligator Records. In June of 1997, after the release of his second CD, Fish Ain't Bitin', we invited Harris to our studio to play and talk about the blues. Corey Harris, welcome to Fresh Air. What tune would you like to open with?
Well, I'd like to open up with an old Blind Lemon Jefferson tune called Take Me Back. Oh, baby. Take me back, won't do nothing, baby, you don't lie. Told you water and cut your wood, make a little fire, baby, if I could. Well, I got a girl, her name is March, works over yonder in the rich folks' yard. Rush me chicken, baby, save me the wing. Think I'm working, ain't do nothing, ain't do nothing. Take me back, baby, take me back. Won't do nothing, baby, you don't lie. Well, I went down that railroad track, begging my baby to take me back. Take me back, baby, one more time. Won't do nothing to will your mind. Where will your mind? Will your mind? Won't do nothing, baby, to will your mind. Will your mind? I'm will your mind, baby. I'm gonna do nothing to you, girl. Won't do nothing, baby, you don't like. I'm going down to a distant land. Get $100 from the rich man's hand. Rich man's hand. Rich man's hand. Get $100 from the rich man's hand. I said, baby, take me back, girl. Take me back. Won't do nothing, baby, you don't lie.
Oh, that's great. Really great. Where'd you learn the song?
Oh, this song... I learned it off the record. It was a song that I heard a lot of different people do. And it's associated, from what I can tell, with Texas. And since I have a lot of roots in Texas, it just spoke to me, I guess. But I really like the song. Manch Lipscomb played it. Blind Lemon Jefferson, I believe, was the first person to record it. And Lightnin' Hopkins played a song similar to it also.
I'm wondering if people often have certain preconceptions of you and your past because you're a young African-American playing the blues.
I think so. I mean, they definitely come to me with questions that are based on their perception of me. And most of the time, it's outside of the reality.
What's the perception usually, that you're from the South?
Well, yeah, usually the perception is that I'm from the South, although I was born in the West, and my family is all from the South. I mean, my roots aren't in the West. They're all in the South, but I was raised out West.
In Denver?
In Denver, yes. People sometimes think that it's inappropriate for me to be playing this music and to have some sort of a higher education, that I am very blessed to have gone to school and to have had parents who stress that, you know. But many critics may say, well, he's so quote-unquote educated, so what is he doing playing this? Which I take offense to, that line of reasoning, but people have it sometimes.
What spoke to you when you first heard the blues growing up in Denver?
When I first heard the first blues that I knew, well, that I could associate with a particular person's name, outside of like Ray Charles, I'd always known about him since I was a little kid, but ZZ Hill was the first true blues man with a guitar, you know, in a band that I heard of. And I remember we were at a family get-together, and someone put on the record, and Down Home Blues was on, and I was like, oh, who is this, you know? I really liked it. Then after that, I was into Lightnin' Hopkins a lot. But I don't really put divisions in music. True, I play blues, but I don't call myself a blues man, because I play ragtime, I play spirituals too, I play reggae. I play a lot of original, and I write a lot of original tunes that are blues and some tunes that are not strictly blues. But I just try to look at my musical production as coming from my roots, you know, and a large part of that's the South. But I try to write original tunes that reflect where I'm from.
I'd love it if you could play an original blues for us, and maybe you could tell us the story behind the song.
Yeah, well, this song is called Fish Ain't Biting, and this song came about with just me thinking about how when I was a kid, we had family reunions and I would go fishing with the family, and it was safe, it was clean, the environment was beautiful. And now a lot of those exchanges are really not very possible, especially in Louisiana where it's petrochemical industry has polluted a lot of the water. Give a man a fish, teach him how to fish, bring the whole school to his door. But what's he gonna do when the fish ain't biting no more? Mm-hmm. Ha! Fish ain't biting, baby, fish ain't biting. Fish ain't biting round here no more. Well, fish ain't biting no more. Taking up my catfish and grinding up my bone. Well, I was down East Texas to Jefferson Town. I had no catfish, had to turn around. Fish ain't biting, baby. Fish ain't biting no more. Taking up the catfish and grinding up my bones, they grinding up. Well, I walked and I walked, y'all. You know I had the fishing rod and suitcase in my hand. I couldn't find no catfish, y'all. Nowhere. Crazy man wanna eat me though. Catfish from a cane. Taking up the catfish and grinding up my bone. Tell you what, girl, baby.
taking up the catfish and grinding up the bone.
That's great. I like the song, and I love the way you did it. Now, how did you learn different blues styles? Did you go to records and just pick it up by ear? Did you have blues musicians that you had access to who could actually show you
things? No, I didn't have access to no one, but I did have a lot of records. And I saw the music, because blues is just one manifestation of the music. I like to call it the music. I mean, black music in general. But I would go to church, and I would see people playing organs and stuff, and it was the feeling was very deep, you know, and a very, very pure feeling, you know, just like you find in blues and jazz and whatnot. And it affected me, and I would see guitar players and whatnot. But most of it was from records, you know. We had some B.B. King records, and I would try to learn some of those licks, and it just wasn't really my style, you know, wasn't for me. So it was something I did on my own, really, just through the records. I got some Lightnin' Hopkins records, and through that, I was able to pick up a few tunes, and bit by bit over the years.
What's the first thing you learned to do that you thought, oh, yeah, I can do this? This is what I want to hear.
Something like an E, the key of E, for all you guitar players out here, the easiest blues key. Simple licks like that, because this chord, one of the first chords I learned. And then later on, I moved to doing different, brighter tunes, like ragtime tunes, which is in the key of C, which is something like...
That must be very hard to pick out by yourself.
Well, I just felt it out, really, over time. I tried to buy books. I bought a book or two, fingerstyle guitar, and they always confused me. So I'm self-taught. I just listen to the strings on the records. I think, well, what's he doing where? What are they doing there? And figure it out, and then spend a lot of time by myself. But I assume I might have some unorthodox ways of playing it. Yeah, sure.
My guest is blues singer and guitarist Corey Harris. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with blues singer and guitarist Corey Harris.
You have brought a second guitar with you. You have a National Steel guitar. Maybe you could pick that one up for us. And it's a beautiful instrument. pictures of surfers in Hawaii on the back, surrounded by palm trees. Tell us about the sound that you get on the steel guitar.
Well, I use a brass slide when I play this guitar.
You've got that on your pinky.
Yeah. And there's a metal resonator inside. And it's like an acoustic speaker. So it really projects. You know, I like the sound. It's very useful on the street when I was a street musician. Mm. It even if I didn't sound too good to some people, at least they're like, well, what's that noise? You know, it's loud, so.
Yeah. What do you want to do for us now?
I'd like to do a Tampa Red tune called Sweet Black Angel. I've got a sweet black angel.
I love the way she spreads her wings. Got a sweet black angel, y'all. I love the way she spreads her wings. When she spreads her wings around me, she brings joy and everything. Well, I love my black angel. I want her all for myself. Love my black angel. I want her all for myself. Don't want to see her spread her wings over nobody else. Nobody else. Yeah, baby, shake it. My black angel for a nickel. You know she give me a $20 bill. Well, I asked my black angel for a nickel, y'all. You know she give me a $20 bill. Ask her for a small drink of liquor. She gave me the whole liquor still. One more do the whiskey still, y'all. Somebody come and get me.
So, as I think you've mentioned, you went to college, to Bates College mm-hmm. in Maine, mm-hmm. and studied, among other things, languages there, particularly French.
Yeah.
Is that your major?
No, my major was anthropology. Yeah. And the very small anthropology department there. And my interest wasn't really anthropology per se, but more languages, mm-hmm. and specifically Pidgin and Creole, and Black English is what I was most interested in and what I studied the most. And that enabled me to go over to Cameroon in West Africa twice and pursue those interests over there. And I also spent a small bit of time on Bioko, a place called Equatorial Guinea, which is a smaller country near Cameroon.
What is Pidgin English?
Pidgin English is basically a language that arose through trade between different cultures. So those cultures will keep their native tongues, but they'll use the pidgin when they're doing their trade. So Pidgin English has a lot of African influence and a lot of African words. Like if you see someone passing by, you say, Ashayawona, you know, hafoskin. And that means, how are you doing? How for your skin? So that's a small example, but it's a very distinct language. And even though some of its roots in the words are from the English language, it's really a totally new African language made out of English.
Huh, that's interesting. Now, does that connect with the blues to you?
Yeah, it does, because in the history of the blues, and in, of course, in gospel as well, jazz and hip-hop, people signify. People say one thing and their meaning another, or they masked their meaning somehow. And pidgin came up in the same environment where people had to communicate, but under oppressive conditions. And so they would take the king's English that their colonizers wanted them to speak and change it around for their own uses.
Did you perform when you were in Africa?
Once I played for some student teachers. They were in their 20s going through a teacher college, and I talked to them a little bit about what little I know about music and the blues. That was very interesting. And then I've played for friends over there. But my aim over there was to pick up as much music as I could and just to listen.
What'd you pick up there? Anything that you could just show us on the guitar? Or
no, I didn't pick up anything on the guitar, really. What I picked up was mostly lessons for me as a musician to do what I want to do, which is primarily that you have to have rhythm in your playing. And I learned when I was in Cameroon to look at my guitar as a drum, because, of course, I knew that the root of this music is the drum and percussion. But then to go over there and see it and to feel it and then to know people who play it, which was my privilege at the time, then I had a new perspective on the instrument. Because, you know, in the continental United States and most of the Western Hemisphere during slavery, the drum was outlawed. And so if you were caught with a drum, that was a death sentence. And unless you were in Congo Square, you may have a drum sometimes. And that was about the only place, Congo Square down in New Orleans. But I believe that a lot of those rhythms were transferred to guitar and to other instruments, fiddle, banjo, you know. Of course, they were already there anyway.
Corey Harris recorded in 1997. We'll get back to his interview and performance in the second half of the show. His latest CD is called Greens from the Garden. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.
Major funding for Fresh Air is provided by Barnes & Noble, bookseller since 1873. Online at barnesandnoble.com, AOL keyword BN. And by the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced. From Petopia.com, offering food, advice, toys, treats, and supplies delivered to pets and their people nationwide. On the web at Petopia.com. From the National Endowment for the Humanities, expanding American understanding of human experience and culture. And from Bantam Books, publishers of Victory in Our Schools by Major General John Stanford, a book outlining his essentials for improving our schools. Available in trade paperback. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
You said about me, don't you, woman? Well, you ain't nothing but a bearcat. Been scratching at my door.
That's Rufus Thomas, who also taught us how to walk the dog and do the funky chicken. Coming up, Ed Ward has a profile. Also, we continue our session with blues guitarist and singer Corey Harris.
I ain't gonna rub you no more. You said you was a long hair, but I can see through that. You said you was a long hair, but I can see through that. And mama, I know you just an old bear cat. You ain't nothing but a bear cat. Been scratching at my door. Ain't nothing but a bear cat. Been scratching at my door. You can purr, pretty kitty, but I ain't gonna rub you no more. Oh, I'll rub ya.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It's Blues Week on Fresh Air. Let's get back to blues guitarist and singer Corey Harris. His latest CD is called Greens from the Garden. When we left off, he was telling us that when he was in West Africa teaching and doing research, he learned a lot about rhythm and realized that many guitar rhythms originate with the drum. I asked him to play a song that showed what he meant.
There's a song by Booker White that I really like. Mm-hmm. It's called Parchment Farm. And Parchment Farm is a notorious prison in Mississippi, a state prison, where it's more like a concentration camp, and it still is like that today. But many different people, from Son House to Stokely Carmichael to Booker White, did their time in Parchment Farm. But he has a song, and during the song, he is beating on the guitar. So I'll just demonstrate. You go.
Judge, give me life this morning down on Parchment Farm. Judge, give me life this morning down on Parchment. Wouldn't hate it so bad. I left my wife alone. Hey, goodbye, wife.
Well, that really makes the point. What came first for you, guitar or singing?
Dancing.
Dancing?
I was a little dancer when I was a kid.
Really?
From the reports I have from my mom. And then I sang. But I had my first guitar when I was 3. It was a little toy 6-string guitar. And I never did learn how to play that one, but I think it sort of imprinted me to be a guitar player later on in life. But I was musical. I did little silly things, like I'd do the ham bone, or I played a little flute. I have a bamboo flute. I still play flute today even. And later on, I was a trumpet player for about 5 or 6 years in public school, in marching band.
Marching band, yeah. Is that fun?
Yeah, it was. But marching band is definitely, at the time, you feel like it's almost punishment.
Oh, I know.
You have to get up early and
wear a military uniform, or something that looks like a military uniform.
And there's the stigma among other kids.
Oh, yeah.
Look at old dummy. He's a marching band. But looking back, it was indispensable for what I'm doing now. Yeah, definitely. And if I was a kid down in New Orleans, you know, you can't turn back time, but I think I would have kept playing trumpet.
Mm-hmm.
But I stopped in Colorado. There weren't a lot of trumpet players. And there wasn't any tradition that was really out there. I mean, except for mariachi music. That's what they had. The only trumpet players I saw when I was a kid. So perhaps I might have kept going.
Well, I'm glad you turned to guitar, actually. You play it so well.
Oh, I do my best.
Would you do another song for us?
Yeah, I'd be glad to.
You want to do an old blues? This is one you do on one of your records called God Don't Ever Change.
Sure. Well, this song, I heard Blind Willie Johnson do it first off the record. And it just hit me. It's a very old spiritual, I imagine. He may have written it, but it has a very old sound to it to me. And, well, I think this song speaks the truth. You know, there's a lot of things that are always changing, the weather, styles, trends, prices. But God is a permanent thing, you know. Whoever you ask who believes in God, God is bigger than time or anything like that. He's God in the middle of the ocean, God in the middle of the sea. By the help of the great creator, truly been a God to me. Well, it's God. God don't never change. Always will be God. I spoke to the mountain, said how great I am. Want you to get up this morning, skip around like a lamb. Well, it's God.
God don't never change. Always will be good. Creation, God, when Adam fell, God way up in heaven, God way down in hell. Oh, God don't never change.
Great. That's Corey Harris. You know, I'm wondering, Corey, when, you, as we said, you grew up in Denver, but your family originally comes from the South. I'm wondering if playing the blues sent you back in search of some family history, and if you started kind of connecting to the South and wanting to see how your family connected to it.
Well, I think that was something that goes through my whole life, is trying to think about what it was like for my family before. Because coming up, one of the things I really remember is my mother telling me, well, down South, we would do it like this. Whatever it may be, if she was instructing me in how to behave or manners, how to be polite, things like that, it would often be, well, down South. Or I was very fond of wearing hats when I was a kid. And I would wear a hat inside and she'd say, don't wear a hat inside, down South. We don't do it like that. So that was always, to me, the point of reference. Even though we lived in Denver, I didn't really relate to the area as, well, this is where we're from, you know? And we would go down to Texas to visit relatives. And there, you know, we'd get to see the graves of, you know, family members who've gone on, and where my mother went to high school, and everyone's houses, or the plot of land where their house used to be. And that impressed me as to really where my origins were, at least my recent origins in this country.
You're living in New Orleans now.
Right now, yes, I am.
Did you first come down there because of the music?
Really, I was placed there by chance, by a teaching organization that I worked for 1 year. I had what they call an emergency certification. I wasn't truly certified, but they hired me to teach French in a public school in a rural area where it was very hard to find French teachers, and other teachers as well. They were short-staffed. So I went there looking for work, and I was already had been playing guitar, playing blues, and I was naturally drawn to New Orleans. And I went and often, well, during the weekends and on weeknights, and checked out music and whatnot.
And I know you started playing on the street in New Orleans.
Yeah.
How did you choose what seemed to be the right corner?
Well, I'd been playing on the street since I was about 14 or 15. When I got to New Orleans, I noticed that the French Quarter has a very active street music scene. Hopefully it will continue to be that way, because certain people in New Orleans want to stop it. But when I was there playing on the street, I would just choose the traditionally good spots. And a lot of times you had to work out an agreement with the other musicians. Well, I'll have it for these 2 hours, and then you'll have it, and then we'll protect it from this guy who's out of town because we don't know who he is, you know? So, and then a place that's not in front of someone's residence or restaurant, or that's not a thoroughfare.
Did anybody, you know, quote, discover you while you were playing on the street?
No, I was knew where I was already. But I did have the good fortune when I was playing on the street up in the King Biscuit Blues Festival in Helena, Arkansas. I met a man who turned out to be the producer of my first record, and we co-produced Fish Ain't Biting together, which is my second one. And we did it on a very shoestring budget. It was a very cottage industry type of operation.
My guest is Corey Harris. More after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is blues guitarist and singer Corey Harris. Corey, I believe you have brought a kazoo with you. Is there a song that goes along with that?
Yeah, there is. Glad you asked. A blue kazoo. This song, Terry, is called Sugar Daddy.
Is this an original?
Yes, it is. I'm a sugar daddy, my mama wonder where to get it from. Down in Louisiana, right on the sugar farm. Where's you calling my name? Thibodeau to Labadee. Ain't a great long way, baby. Calling my name from Thibodeau to Labadee. All along Bayou Lafourche. I'm as sweet as they come, but I won't rot your teeth. I ain't gonna rot your teeth, girl. Come on, dance. Big fat mamas always talk about sugar less. That's the big fat mamas always talk about sugar less. I got something new for them. I found a sugar daddy, Lord, they won't give him no rest. Well, a bourbon brown sugar just as sweet as she can be. Ah-ha, sweet as she can be. I caught her in the canebrake doing chivalry. Well, you be my sugar mama, be a sweet papa too. Be my sugar mama, I'll be a sweet papa too. Tastes so sweet, I can't remember how to sing my blues. I done forgot, baby, come on.
No, now I have to spend a lot of time talking about your kazoo technique. Where you learned it from.
Oh, my kazoo technique.
Oh, yeah. You know, I imagine you've been spending a lot of time with musicians whose records you listen to now that you're performing at blues festivals and so on. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering what it's like for you to, you know, to hang out with B.B. King and Buddy Guy and to play shows with them.
Well, there's not a whole lot of hanging out that we do. Mm-hmm. Usually it's at the venue.
Right.
I'm gonna go in his dressing room and say how you doing, or
do you ask them to share licks with you, or
no? To me, it's not really about that. It's just a pleasure to be able to know the man who was my first concert was B.B. King.
Uh-huh.
So really, my first conception of a blues player was B.B. King. ZZ Hill also, I mentioned him, but he's no longer with us.
Have you learned anything about living life on the road from people like B.B. King?
Well, noticing Mr. King on the road, he's very careful to take care of himself, maintain his health, get good rest. That's common sense, because if you can't do that, you can't be on the road. Some people think you're out on the road and it's a big party, you're living the life of Riley or something, but if you go out with that attitude, then you'll eventually fall asleep and not make your next gig. From other people like Eddie Kirkland gave me specific advice that I should eat lots of fish, and that will the oil will lubricate my vocal cords, and that I should take castor oil or cod liver oil.
Ooh, are you following that?
No, but I do eat fish. And if you're listening, Eddie, thank you.
Well, Corey Harris, it's really been a pleasure to have you here. Mm. I really want to thank you a lot for playing for us. It just sounded great.
Well, it's my pleasure to be here. I love your show.
Oh, thank you.
And I wish you all the best.
Corey Harris, recorded in 1997. Let's hear a track from his latest CD, Greens from the Garden. This is Diddy Wah Diddy.
There's a great big mystery, and it sure is worrying me. This diddy wah diddy, this diddy wah diddy. Will somebody tell me what diddy wah diddy mean? Well, I went to Treme, walked around. Somebody else is cruising town. Miss Diddy Wah Diddy, Miss Diddy Wah Diddy. Will somebody tell me what diddy wah diddy mean? Girl, about 4'4". Come on, Papa, and give me some. Yo, diddy wah diddy. Oh, you diddy wah diddy. I wish somebody tell me what diddy wah diddy mean. Church set my hat on the seat. Lady sat down on it, said, Daddy, you sure is sweet. Miss Diddy Wah Diddy. Yeah, baby. Miss Diddy Wah Diddy. I wish somebody tell me what Diddy Wah Diddy mean. I said, sister, I'll soon be gone. Just give me that thing you sitting on. My Diddy Wah Diddy. My Diddy Wah Diddy. I wish somebody tell me what Diddy Wah Diddy mean.
Corey Harris. Coming up, rock historian Ed Ward profiles rhythm and blues singer Rufus Thomas. This is Fresh Air. As part of our Blues Week programming, on Friday we'll hear part of the concert Fresh Air presented at the 1997 Chicago Blues Festival with Rufus Thomas. He brought the golden era of black vaudeville to the rock and roll stage and taught many young singers how to move, including a tall and gawky Otis Redding. Our rock and roll historian Ed Ward has a profile of Thomas, a man who reputedly knows over 100 dances.
Shucks. It's all right. Elvis Presley and Otis Redding notwithstanding, if anybody put Memphis on the musical map, it was Rufus Thomas. He was born in 1917 in Collierville, Tennessee, but his family soon moved to Memphis, where young Rufus made his debut on stage at the age of 14. Before long, he'd hooked up with Ma Rainey's Rabbit Foot Minstrels, where a motherly blues singer named Georgia Dixon took him under her wing and taught him stage presence and how to dance. Both of these came in handy later. By the end of World War II, Rufus was married and had a daughter, and in order to support his family, he became one of the first disc jockeys on WDIA in Memphis, a powerful station known as the Mother Station of the Negroes because it broadcast black music all over the South. He was also making obscure blues records, and on weekends, he emceed the amateur night show at the Palace and Handy Theaters, where first prize was a dollar. There, he discovered a guitar player named Riley King, who would walk into town with his guitar and a gunny sack to play because he needed that dollar so badly. Rufus finally got him a job on the radio, where, as the Beale Street Blues Boy, he became known as B.B. King. In 1953, Rufus had played Willie Mae Thornton's record Hound Dog so many times that he decided he could do that, too. So he found a little studio in Memphis and jumped into big-time record-making with both feet. Bearcat, his answer to Hound Dog, got the label sued for plagiarism, but it put Sun Records on the map, so Rufus made another record for them that drove people wild. From then on, Rufus was a huge celebrity in Memphis, but he had no intention of becoming a rock and roll star. He liked doing what he did, having people whisper about him because he was the first black DJ to play Elvis on the radio, and being the goofy MC at the amateur shows. In fact, he didn't make another record until 1960 when his 18-year-old daughter Carla begged him to get her a record deal, and they cut a duet for another young label, Stax, called 'Cause I Love You. Stax was so happy that they told him the door was open anytime he wanted to record. And when Carla came home from school one day with a new dance, he walked over to Stax and cut his next hit.
Come on, babe. Do the dog. Do the dog. Do the dog. Do the dog.
The song wasn't much, but the dance was hot, so he figured another dog song couldn't hurt and came up with this.
She can't so walk in the dog. Guess a walking bird dog. If you don't know how to do it, I'll show you how to walk the dog.
The one problem with the dog was that it was such a dirty dance you couldn't do it on Bandstand. But they didn't know that in Britain, where the song became a must-do for a generation of bands coming up. Stax, counting their money, decided that Rufus had the inside track on teenage dance crazes. He wasn't about to disappoint them, even if he had to invent them himself. Some of those dances Georgia Dixon had taught him came in handy as he recorded Can Your Monkey Do the Dog, The Chicken Scratch, The Sophisticated Sissy, and this masterpiece.
Something I want to show you. Now y'all heard of the popcorn, y'all heard of the dog, and you heard about all of them other dances. But now that's a brand new dance that's going around.
I want to show you exactly what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the funky chicken.
Even Joan Baez did the funky chicken. There were more. The Push and Pull, The Breakdown, The Funky Penguin. Rufus churned out dance hits until Stax Records went broke in the mid-70s. And he's ready to do some more. What I need right now, he told a friend of mine recently, is another dog.
Ed Ward is a writer currently living in Berlin. On Friday, we'll feature an excerpt of Fresh Air's concert featuring Rufus Thomas at the 1997 Chicago Blues Festival. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Today's Blues Week edition was produced by Kathy Wolf. Our engineer is Chris Fraley. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. I'm Terry Gross.
E-I-E-I-O, can you monkey to the dog?
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Bantam Books, publishers of Legacy, a biography of Moses and Walter Annenberg by Christopher Ogden, in hardcover wherever books are sold. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Destination. Heartbreak.
On the next Fresh Air, Rhythm and Blues, we feature interviews from the archives with Ruth Brown, Etta James, and the late Laverne Baker. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
One way ticket to teardrops.